Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It is the 4th of August, 2022. Summer's more than halfway over and you better find a way to enjoy it or you're going to regret it. This is Jim Edger from Digital Always Media, and today I'm joined by Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls in Las Vegas. Dave is globetrotting. He's off on meetings. So Christine, thank you for diving in, eh?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I always like stepping in when Dave is globetrotting.
You stepped into an interesting week. There's technical SEO is one of your one of your specialties, and we have some fun technical SEO stuff this week. First thing, and I think this is like kind of a big important one. Did you see the new announcement? I think it was just a couple of days ago. Google came out with the announcement on Google Tag.
Yeah, the new centralized tag solution.
Yeah, it's almost like the one ring tag that will tag your campaigns in Google campaigns, information in Google Analytics, information in Google Data Studio, Google 360, etc. It's a tag that goes above your current Google Tag Manager build, but it will allow you to move data between these various accounts, apparently with easy interoperability.
Well, that sounds good. I haven't had a chance to really delve into it yet to know if what sounds good is good, but
that
sounds like a good solution.
No one's had a chance to delve into them yet because it just rolled them out. And they're going to finish rolling out the Google Tag for all sectors, whatever, sometime in the next, I think it was 2 to 7 days. I'm unsure why there's a rollout for a tag itself, but it's one of those things that everyone should use. They do say that you need to add it to all pages where you have your Google Analytics or your Google Tag Manager code. So it's something you got to do. This is one of those SEO and digital marketing must do's. So there's a great article over at Search Engine Land on Google Tag, and there's the information at Google's blog, blog.google/products/ad-commerce, etc. You'll find it. Go to google.com and type in Google Tag. You'll find the information you need.
Yeah, and so people don't panic. They will deprecate the older tag, but it still will continue to work. This won't continue to update it. So you have some time. This isn't something you have to worry about tomorrow.
No, but
do it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you want to get out of the way. So what else do we got? We have the upgrades or updates to the quality rater guidelines. Especially around things like your money or your life.
We do. So Jennifer Slegg wrote her quality guideline update. She has updates for all the ones that have ever been written. So it's a really good site to go look at because she really knows what she's talking about when it comes to the quality raters guide. Just a quick disclaimer for everybody out there. These are not SEO guides. This is a guide. So the things that Google wants quality raters to know when they rate their tweaks to the algorithms so that they can tell them whether they surfaced quality sites or not with their changes. So make sure you don't take, make sure you don't take this and go, I now need to apply everything in here, because you don't. That's not what the purpose of the quality raters guide is for.
No, this is just showing what Google's intent is in trying to form the best possible search results it can. And so it's telling humans what to look for when looking at the search results.
Exactly. And it's using the core signals that we've always used to try to surface these sites. So there isn't some special magic potion out of the quality raters guide. It's content quality, technical, links to your site, structure, internal linking, all the normal things that Google likes out of site, but they tweak the core algorithms to try to surface sites that more closely match what the quality raters are meant to evaluate. So,
just the one last note to beat this dead horse, what you find in the quality raters guide, we can't beat the horse dead enough, let me tell you. What you find in the quality raters guide is Google's the best view we have of what Google wants, but it isn't necessarily a black and white photocopy of what Google needs, in especially in your circumstance or back there on the row back there, your circumstance.
It's basically the outline of what creates a really good website. So it's good if you want to learn what creates a good website, but it doesn't mean that Google is evaluating what it put in this guide as far as the ranking signals to surface your website, because they're using the core ranking signals to do that. And the reason I think the dead horse can't be beat bad enough or long enough is because every time one of these comes out, people look for magic tricks to SEO. I saw someone calling it the SEO Bible the other day on a social. Yeah. And so it's just so important to remind people this is not an SEO guide. It is a quality raters guide. And also the quality raters, they did more in this version to explain to you they in no way ever affect the search results directly. So there was some belief that the quality rater signals went straight to the machine learning and suddenly that changed how websites work. That's not the case.
Could you imagine how crazy it would be if it did work like that?
Right? So for those who don't know how this works, the quality raters, they do hundreds, maybe thousands of tests. They aggregate all the data. They analyze it. It goes to the search engineers. If they decide something is valid and they want to put it in the algorithms because it surfaces sites better, good sites better, then it goes to quality control, testing, QA, and even legal before they're allowed to put it into the algorithm.
You can almost 100% guarantee it. The original search quality rater will have no clue what happened either.
No. And not one person or even 10 people will affect, or 100 in one test would affect search results, because once they find a result, they're going to test it to make sure that it's, repeats itself.
So now that we've said all of that.
Yes, sorry.
What happened? What did they change?
Well, there's a lot they changed. Really should read Jennifer's article. And if you don't know how to find it, just put SEM post. Mm-hmm. And then quality rater guidelines. And she has a whole page of all of them listed, all her updates. But one of the big things is the money or life definition. So the your money or life definition that Google has, it means like these pages are important. So the old definition was just basically, does this impact a person's future happiness or wealth, financial stability or safety? And then they had a general category, like they had sites like news sites, medical sites, financial sites. And then it's at a general category. Any site we decide falls under these guidelines, we will now call money or life site. But what they're doing now is they're actually defining it much more specifically. So is it the person who's directly viewing or using the content? Other people who are affected by the person viewing the content? Groups of people or society affected by the actions of people that review the content? So if you put out something about people of another race being inferior, let's just call them purple people, then Google could devalue your website based on you affecting those people with your false claims. Now, Google doesn't evaluate falsity, but Google can use entities to evaluate things in content.
Okay, so one of the changes that did happen in your money or your life, and actually this is a really interesting one, is Google confirmed what people have long suspected, that they see the impact of your money or your life, the importance of a your money or your life site on a spectrum. So some of them are clearly really, really impactful, ones that tell people, give people like direct health information. Quite like your example using racism, say there's a website that says if you eat raw onions, you can get rid of cancer. Google really wants to know about sites like that and devalue them pretty quickly. That site is on the your money or your life spectrum, and I think it would be found on what we would call very low on the spectrum, not considered relevant, important, or authoritative at all. Google never ever said that they had a spectrum, a sliding scale of your money or your life sites or evaluations. They've confirmed that in fact they do. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, I was just going to say though, so people understand, you'll also see John Mueller say, or maybe Danny too, that they don't know if your site's your money or your life. So how are they doing a your money or life designation? Well, again, these are quality raters that are supposed to assess if it's your money or life. But also by entity evaluation, they can determine whether the entities associated with your site are your money or life or not. So the entities, like if you're talking about a page about cancer and Cures and Onions, well, Google isn't evaluating the content like we would, but it could see you have cancer and Cures and Onions on the same page. Maybe that's not a high quality page. And a quality rater can definitely look at it and say, well, these should not be on this page because this is not a valid claim. So that's part of how they look at it. So it's a human review and then how Google looks at it, and they're very different. So.
Similarly, Google cleared up, or maybe threw a wrench into, some perceptions of what EAT, expertise, authority, and trustworthiness might be. And this is around what it is phrased, at least Jennifer Slegg's piece in the SEM post, as a quote unquote respected website. And I'm going to read directly from what Jennifer wrote. Throughout these guidelines, Google has made multiple new references to the fact that just because a site is considered authoritative or highly respected, its content cannot automatically be regarded as high quality. They make specific reference to academic institutions and government websites, but this is addressing some issues that Google is seeing and wants the raters to help them identify these pages on authoritative websites as potentially being low quality. For instance, you got a question about your taxes. You go to the IRS website. You'd think the IRS is the authority on the American tax system, right? Well, what if the content on that page just happens to be craptastic? It just doesn't answer, you know, out of a million pages, one of them is going to be crappy, right? What if? So just because it's the IRS page, doesn't the quality rater isn't necessarily going to, can't necessarily assume it's great content. And I think that also signals that just because you might have a number of other analytic ducks in a row, you got high score here, high score here, high score here, it doesn't mean Google's gonna love your content. You gotta have good content. Honestly, I think that's what this says.
Well, and also, again, a clarification, because this is one of the most misunderstood things in the industry, is EAT is not a directive. There is no algorithms that evaluate expertise, authoritativeness, and trust as listed in the Quality Raters Guide. But EAT is a concept. So you don't need to pay $1,000 an hour to get a doctor to write your medical content. That might be good for users, though. That's a different story.
And the doctor, if the doctor knows what she or he or they are talking about.
That's true. But if you do need a knowledgeable writer, because again, Google's evaluating this through their machine learning algorithms like neural matching and contextuality of content and entities in the page. And so if you are writing about something and you're using all these entities that don't have any association in their mathematical formula of things that are associated with each other, then Google's probably going to assume this is a low quality page. If it's an IRS page, they're not looking at it like we are. And it doesn't matter who wrote it. They don't know every author in the world. That would be crazy. Could you imagine? Jim, today you're writing about this. Tomorrow you're writing about that. Google has to know all your expertise changes, right? That would never work. Trillions of pages.
I like to think they've forgotten about me as a writer, to be honest. That makes me feel more comfortable.
That's what they show me in search as. I'm a writer, not an SEO, which I think is funny. I don't think SEO is an entity. So it's really important people understand that these EAT guidelines are meant to what Google wants out of a site, but not a specific guide. So even Google even says your author can be the website. You don't have to have any authors listed, but your content does have to be knowledgeably written. So you want to pay an author who can write knowledgeably, do good research, make sure they're on point for the topic and on the page, because as we know now, it's at the page level and it's actually at the query level. When you look at a core update devaluation, it's a query level applied devaluation. Because they can only tell your money, your life by the query set, by the entity set. So that's why it's just really important not to get into the weeds of EAT and think that I now got to hire 100 authors at $1,000 a page. I just need to have people that write good content well and know the topic.
Well, on behalf of authors, for what it's worth, if you do want to hire authors at $1,000 a page, that's a very good idea. I encourage a lot more of that, to be honest. I think it's the best thing ever.
This is true. But if you're a small business and you think you need to spend $20,000 on your content, just get someone who can write really well and really knowledgeable, like Jim Hedger here, who is fantastic at writing about anything well.
Well, even better, do it yourself. I'm not kidding. And get somebody who knows what they're doing to edit it. Like, yes. If, and how many times, seriously, Christine, in your career as an SEO or as a website developer or anything, how many times have you been held up by not getting the content you need to do the job?
I don't know.
Have you had plans? You know, you tell the client you should do this, and part of that is build content, and once you build the content, you're giving me the tools where I can do something else. How many times have those kind of plans been stalled because content has been what you got to tell clients is to write it, even if it's direct, write it in point form and then re-edit it, but get it done. There's no way. John Mueller went on a rant the other day. Okay. So John, and this totally pertains to what we were talking about with Eat and what we were talking about with your money in your life too. John Mueller went on vacation and he took a week or so off and he came back and he looked at his email box and not mad, but I think he just got frustrated. He stepped away from the abyss for a little while and forgot about all the dumbass questions he gets asked, including all of the shortcut questions.
Yes.
And you were saying this earlier, every time somebody sees something changed in the guidelines, they figure some shortcut has been published and they can go look at it and zing, zang, zoom, they get great rankings because they found the shortcut. It doesn't work that way. You can read all the SEO blogs in the world and it still won't work that way. Then you should read SEO blogs. You should, because it gives you an understanding of how the world works. But you're not going to find a magic bullet in any of those blogs unless that magic bullet is something that fires your imagination to do the content and build good sites, strong, structurally sound sites, but do the content work, because that's what Google wants to rank.
Right. No, very true. And it's so important that people understand the truth is regular SEO is kind of boring. It's not boring in the results you get, but it's pretty straightforward in the top level. The details are where it gets difficult, and that's where your experience comes in. But writing good content, having links come to your site, good architecture and structure, making sure Google can crawl and index your pages, right? All that is so much of what SEO is. And we're really past the age of quick tricks. Occasionally, someone might find something that slips through the Google algorithms and you can manipulate rankings, but we're not really at that stage anymore. That was a decade ago.
Yeah, and if you are doing that, the amount of effort you're putting into it, seriously, you better be making a heck of a lot of money for the effort you're putting into it, because it's a lot of effort. I know a story of somebody literally walking the streets of London with a rider wagon, with a little red wagon full of cell phones, just to get the cell phone patterns that they wanted. Now, that's a lot of work. Like, I would never do that. That's insane. I get paid to sit here all day and look at numbers. What do I want to go out there with a bunch of cell phones for? That's crazy. But you know what? For somebody, that is a lifestyle that fits their practice. I wouldn't do it.
I'm not going to take away from black cats, because there are people who are really good at black cat and yeah. They can manipulate some things. But if you're not one of those people that's an expert at that and have done it over and over again and gotten it to repeat and repeat and repeat, by just reading and not doing, you're not learning. So I do site recoveries because I learn so much when I do a site recovery, right? I think this works and then I try it. And if it doesn't work, I got to check a different lever.
Well, and you know what, Christine? And that brings us exactly back to what John Mueller freaked about, because the crux of his rant was stop trying to get that magic bullet and just do things. Affect a website. You'll learn.
Now, I will go to John when I get a question I've never heard of before, and there are no answers out there.
That's appropriate.
And my client needs an answer and I can't find it. And then I will ask them a question, because it's such a minute, weird, strange situation, right? An anomaly. But yeah, generally speaking, stop looking for secret bullets. I mean, by the way, if you want to do black hat, then go to some black, really good black hatters and learn from them. That's a whole different thing. That's a whole different industry. But when you're talking about, I'm going to read some blog posts and I'm going to make my site rank overnight, that's just not how it works.
No.
Yeah.
And then again, for what it's worth, those Black Hatters, there's great reward with the great risk they're taking, but they work really hard for those great rewards. Like, they brag about their passive income from that nice speedboat that they have, and they really do have passive income in a nice speedboat, but they work hard to make that happen.
Exactly. They don't, even their tricks aren't tricks. Their tricks are, we know how to exploit the algorithm in certain places from our years of experience, and we can do that over and over again. And that helps us make money, or people pay us really well to do that.
Indeed. And it's a grind. It is a total grind.
It is a total grind. It's worse than our grind, actually. I like doing, we'll call it gray hat, because there's no true white hat, because everybody does something to attract links. But let's say in our gray hat world, I like, here's the rules, and let me see if I can make this site hit those rules hard enough that I get that big boost, that hockey stick we all love, right? I like that. But if you're a Black Hatter, you got like 70 sites or 100 sites or 10,000 sites that you're turning and burning, and you're like doing the Black Hat stuff, but you know, hey, you might, I know one guy that lost 70,000 sites overnight because he accidentally published two of the same links to all 70,000 sites.
Oops.
Yeah, he had his contact Matt.
Oh, that was Alex Jones' attorney, right?
That's all it is.
Enough.
No, we can talk about it. No, I was just going to say, Dave was part of this situation. And the guy asked us if we'd asked Matt about getting his sites back. And we're like, we'll ask, but you're not getting your sites back. And all Matt said was, ha, 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 no.
I get it. Who published the article? Was it Barry who published the There's No SEO Benefit in Knowing People at Google this week? Why did he have to publish that? Like, what's that all about?
Probably why John wrote the rant, because he gets so many people contacting him. No.
Yeah. Hey, there's, please, there's, will you get this worked out for you? Actually, you know what? You're probably right. I bet you that's the reason.
It, though. Apparently, there are agencies that are saying, we know somebody at Google. Now, I will say, when I talk to a client and they have a tough problem, I say, well, I can ask John on Twitter if he has an answer to this. Otherwise, I'll have to do a lot of research.
Well, and the funny thing is, John will probably reply to you because he knows your question is of good faith.
Right, exactly. And so that's different. Like saying, I know somebody on Twitter at Google, or if I really have to ask, I can send an email, but I do that like once every 5 years. I never use an email unless I really, really, really have to. But that doesn't give me an advantage. That's just, they can tell me if I'm off track or if I have this really hard issue, you know, if it's a Google problem, basically. So, but this is more people are like, hey, they're giving their pitch of what I read on Twitter yesterday. And they're saying, we know people at Google, so we have special insight that'll make you rank. And nobody has that, because even the Google engineers don't even know how everything works anymore. But even if they did, they sign contracts, and then Google has a lot of lawyers. And if you were like leaking secrets about the algorithm to friends, they could find themselves in a lot of hot water and very, very broke for many, many years.
Good Lord. Many, many years, like forever. You're never working again.
Exactly.
And actually, like, I'm not that I would imagine this actually happens, but Google is like one of the biggest corporations in the world. That's beyond leg breaking. Anyway.
Yeah.
Unless you are a lawyer for Rumble, the right wing social media outlet that accused Google of antitrust practices, promoting its own stuff, its own YouTube and its own YouTube and search content ahead of everything else, and censoring, and then accused Google of a whole bunch of stuff. An antitrust ruling that went in their way might actually give Rumble access to parts of or all of Google's algorithm.
That's a little bit of an exaggeration, because
it was reported by Ken Greenwald.
Yeah, so I read the Verge article on this. And so all it is allowing it to go forward. There is no determination on they get part of the algorithm. But here's the thing. So when you read the article from Verge, you get some of the quotes from the parties. And so it's very common in, and by the way, when we say right wing, let's be really clear. Rumble is the place for white nationalists to like post stuff. I mean, they have other stuff, but this is where these guys, there's actually a slew of these guys who walk around with video cams and they post live streams and they get paid as they post, who are white nationalists, who go to white nationalist events. And that's a lot of what the content is on there. So it's not just right wing, it's like extreme bad stuff.
Okay, so the far right, a social media video platform, Rumble.
And by the way, they make a lot of money. It's really sad. One guy that was at the insurrection made $100,000 a year off of these live stream videos. But anyway, that's beside the point. So basically what they're saying is they're lower in the algorithms, and Google's saying, but there are other people in the search result that outrank us. So you're not ranking because your site sucks, basically. Just to be really blunt. I mean, they didn't use the word sucks, but that's what they said.
And so Rumble's like, we don't believe you. Prove it.
Right. And we've seen this before, like in, I believe it, no, it wasn't Breitbart. But one of those right sites that likes to say that they're being suppressed, and they put up an image of their traffic, and apparently someone had done an analysis and they didn't know what the little overlay on the image meant, because it says core update drop. So they were blaming Google for suppressing them, but they actually had a core update drop, and it's in the graphic they put in their own article about Google suppressing them because their content, and they don't like them because they're not left. And that's 100% not what happened. It's a bad site that got a core update kit, like so many sites do. I mean, I'm working with a guy who writes about cars, you know, and he got a core update hit. So it has nothing to do with your political.
I mean, in all fairness, this car has only turned right.
Yeah. Oh, dad joke, but boom. Boom. But the point being is, here's what this is my feeling. If they did win somehow to win this, they're only allowed to see a portion of the algorithms, what they're asking for. All Google would do is change the algorithm going forward, because it would take years to get this through the courts. You know, we're probably talking 5-10 years. Yeah. And by the time they win it, okay, sure, we'll show you that part of the algorithm from 10 years ago that we no longer have, you can have that. And there's no way they could get the current algorithm because they weren't affected by it.
Indeed. And as you said, by the time this goes to court, the current algorithm will be, you know, probably outdated and rather moot, much like the original PageRank kernel is outdated and rather moot.
Exactly. So I don't see this as being much of anything. And I do think when they get to court, because other sites ranked above Google, it's really hard to prove that it was because of Google.
I mean, if the case goes further, and if in going further, they are allowed access to Google's innermost secrets, it'll be the first time anyone's read Google's diary. That's always been kept under lock and key.
Yeah, but it'll be like one of those documents you get from the government where like 3/4 of it is blacked out.
Yeah, and the stuff that isn't blacked out, as you said, is now redundant, so or useless. So
exactly.
Okay, let's get. You know what? We should jump to some useful stuff. If you go over to Search Engine Journal and check out the Matt Southern article, say you're a YouTube creator. There's new goodies for YouTube creators. I think this is really cool. YouTube is giving their content creators access to new metrics. They're giving them access to a much larger pool of copyrighted music. So thank goodness. And because honest to God, you hear the same little clips over and over and over again if you watch enough YouTube. And they're giving their creators access to a new and improved YouTube Studio video editor. I think this is, again, there's more and more people who are using video in their promotions, and more people who are, you know, making money on the YouTube platform, just bringing information, be it cooking recipes, how to rescue someone while they're choking, or plumbing guidelines. If you are a creator, use this stuff.
So Google's very scared of TikTok right now. So...
Everyone's scared of TikTok right now. Good Lord.
Which is kind of funny, because they had that article about how all these people are doing search on TikTok. And I was like, I use TikTok and I've tried to do search. And maybe for like you want, I don't know. I cannot even figure out how to get a restaurant.
It really depends what you're looking for, honestly.
Yeah. It's not made for search. But the point is, like they're doing remixes now on YouTube, like you do on TikTok, where you can remix with another video. So that's part of this new creator studio where they can do more of those and get more data about that. And the video editor, I'm sure, is probably going to be something to try to compete with TikTok as well. I will say one thing, though. I do find when you're a tech company trying to copy what other tech companies do because people under 25 like it, it's not usually a good sign for the company. Google's not really done that before. This is like kind of their like a first major change they're making because of a competitor. I don't think I remember any other, you know, am I wrong?
Oh, I don't know. I'd suggest that even though Oh my, I can't believe I'm forgetting. Google, what was Google's social network again?
Oh, that was Google Plus. That's a whole different thing though. That was
okay, Google Plus was made as to be an identity network. Absolutely. It was sold to be a social network. It was sold to be a Facebook competitor, which was probably tactically a mistake on Google's part, but it was really a, and this could have been really elegant had they done it properly, or had the public taken to it properly, the way that they wanted them to. It, you know, it may well have been a authenticator.
Well, the Google Plus thing, though, the reason I don't think it was very good is social wasn't its goal. Its goal was to replace passwords on the internet by creating identity providers, which was an effort across the world, actually, all countries all over the world. And the identity providers would validate you to the website you were logging into, but they would get all the data. So if they got you on G Plus Social, then they could get you to like G Plus and then sign up for it. And then eventually they just forced you to have a G Plus login to log into anything on Google, because that they were using for that data collection. But then Snowden came out, and within a year, the government defunded that whole idea, and Google Plus went to being a straight social network, and soon after that, it was shut down.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it was really a competitor. I could be, but I think it was more, we're going to use social to get people to use a service. And again, this just wasn't Google. This was across the world. But the first three ones recognized by the federal government in the United States were Equifax, PayPal, and Google. They were the first three identity providers. And you can look this up if you've never heard about it under NSTIC, Google, and you'll see all the information about it.
Yeah, it's funny. Google's been far more protective of personal data than Equifax has.
But this was years ago.
I'm really mad at Equifax and the screw up they had with people's credit.
Oh my gosh, yes.
It's just the damage they did. It was only a 3-week period, but the damage done to so many people over that period I can't even think about what that's
I know. You're going up for a mortgage, or you're trying to get a credit card because you need to pay for your kid's school or something.
And things aren't stressful enough right now for people, eh? It's horrible.
Just back to one thing real quick, is just the copying TikTok. I don't know if you've noticed, but I sent you a screenshot of it, so I don't know if you've gotten it. But Google is now showing 8 to 10 video results in the regular search results for a search query.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking up a lawyer anchor that's on a station here called MSNBC. And I put MSNBC lawyer, and I got 8 video results. Why is that a video? Because they're trying to compete with TikTok. They think everybody now wants video content, right? So other people have been showing me this too. They're getting these ridiculous 8 to 10 video search results. So if you see a downtick all of a sudden in your search, in your numbers, make sure that your query is not returning one of these video results, because I guarantee you, one, you're probably not in it, because most of the stuff is coming from major sites. And two, most people don't have time to watch videos on a search engine. I'm on TikTok, it's a 10-second video. You know, I may take half an hour and go through some. On Google search, I'm trying to find information. So giving me 8 video results is not helpful.
I got one client that actually sells a line of really well-known recreational products. And they use video to the nth degree to promote their products. So I got to tell you, I am loving this. Seriously, loving this.
Great, don't get me wrong, but we do have a video tab, and interjected video searches are fine.
Well, this is good too.
my query term was just MSNBC lawyer. That was the term, and I got back 8 video results.
Geez, you didn't get anything to do with paintball guns, did you?
No.
I'll try harder next time.
That's all I put. I couldn't remember how to spell the lawyer's name for Twitter. I wanted to make a comment, and I couldn't find their name. So the point being is that's a crazy result, and hopefully short-lived, because it's completely non-useful. I mean, I get with paintball gun, sure, that's useful. But also, if I want to look up how to buy a paintball gun, I probably don't want the video result. I probably want
to look what's really useful? A lawyer with a paintball gun. much more useful than most lawyers most of the time, especially if you're Alex Jones. But I digress.
Well, you know what? Since we really want to see him talk about the song, Jonathan Goodman.
I'm sorry. Every time, you know what? I keep looking for the next story that we want to jump to, and I got this little image of Alex Jones the moment he was told that the families had all that information, that phone data. And every time I try to jump to a new story, I see the look in his eyes, and it's blowing me away. It's hilarious.
Well, that's what I was trying to find out when I said embassy lawyer. There's a couple of very well-known lawyers that are very high up in the United States as lawyers, like constitutional lawyers. So I was trying to find out, did the lawyers do anything wrong? Because the other team asked for the information. Jones said he didn't have it. The lawyers found out he did. If they accidentally, in quotes, sent it, did they violate the law?
No, as I understand it, Jones has been going through lawyer teams trying to screw up the discovery process and screw up the amount of information that the opposing the family's counsels have. This is a relatively new law team. They've only been around for several months. And think of the insane amount of legal documents that go into any court case, right?
Right.
They were probably fulfilling a document request and didn't honestly know what had been done before and got confused, and everything is happening so fast and they're relatively new, and you know, stuff happens. or they hate him too.
Well, you know, if people don't know, because maybe they're not, you know, you and I follow this stuff.
They know.
But they may not know that what this trial is about isn't about whether he's guilty. That's already been determined.
That's been established. So, he's guilty.
So the parents of Sandy Hook children were incredibly harassed because of what Jones said about it being fake and crisis actors, and their kids weren't really dead. And the people who followed him would go to their homes. One family moved 27 times after their child was killed.
Yeah.
So the defamation claim is $150 million on this case, and they won that part. They're just determining how much of the money they get. Well, he was trying to also hide his finances.
Yeah.
So apparently, in all that data is all his finances. And if you want to cry right now, he made $165 million over 3 years on selling supplements to people that watch his show. So, but the damage is $150 million. That's what they're asking, and he made $165 million, and now they have proof that he has that money.
You know, that leaves a cool $15 million for his wife. So, that's cool. Or his ex-wife, yeah. I should say. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but the thing with all of it though is just like you said, the face when he realized he continued to lie in court, and he got admonished for that multiple times. But his face when he realized, and also the other thing is, lots of friends of his. Who are usually very vocal on Twitter. Apparently, people are noticing today they have not posted at all since that information came out yesterday. So, because they have his emails, his text messages, his photos, anything he's done, they have that access for the last 3 years. So, it's going to get very interesting.
Yep, the world has a way of writing itself sometimes. And this is a great example. You know what? I have moved the image of him from my screen. I can't see his sweaty, bulgy face. And I will not be distracted any further, I promise, mostly. Okay, here was a cool story that actually just came out quite, I think, this morning. I didn't even know this existed, eh? You know how Google publishes a amazing trove of developer guidelines?
Yes.
Did you know that there was an overview page for them? One that shows you all the guidelines they've published? Today I learned.
What did you learn?
Today I learned that there is an overview page that you can go to that makes it really easy to find any guideline or guidelines based on topics that they might relate to. There's literally dozens of them. And I never knew this page, developers.google.com/search/docs/advanced-guidelines-overview. I did not know it existed.
You didn't know this? Oh, so here's the interesting.
And now that I know, I knew how to get to any of the pages themselves, but this page itself made me so happy to see. Moreover, there's additions to this page. five new guidelines to report on, which also made me very, very happy, although one of them has since been removed. Google outlines best practices for SEOs and for webmasters, and they've added best practices for e-commerce sites in Google Search to establish your business details in Google, guidelines for web hosting services, and keeping redacted information out of Google Search. They had also published best practices for bloggers, but have since removed it. So the overview page blew me away. I don't know why I didn't know about that before. I probably feel stupid for not knowing about it, but boy, do I feel smart for knowing about it now.
Definitely don't feel stupid, but I tweet about these every few months, so you probably should follow me more, but I'm just saying. I'm just kidding.
I'll follow the guidelines when I'm good and ready. Damn it.
Whenever someone's posting about what secret tricks they thought they found in the Quality Raters guideline, I always post these and then the other ones that they have about. Once you get into these, you have other links for like advanced SEO, webmaster guidelines, things like that. Because this is what Google is looking for from SEOs, not from quality raters, right?
I reference the dev docs all the time. I just didn't know this one page existed.
Yeah, no, I know. But I'm saying for other people who don't know about these docs, that they may not know all that's in there, right? And so, by the way, Google is terrible at search. So when you look for a developer doc, make sure you add to your search developer doc, Google developer doc, because generally they won't come up in the top 10 or 20. But if you have an issue you want to know about from Google, like from anything from what's the best practices for canonicals or for robots text or for your content or anything that you can think of in SEO, do a search on those and add Google developer docs and you almost will always find that they have a reference doc. It doesn't mean that they give us all the information. There's some things about links where they just want you to do what they want you to do and aren't 100% accurate. But 99% of the time, you're going to find really good information about what you need to know about how to implement SEO on a technical level, even if that technical is content. I don't mean technical SEO, but I mean like on content. So they're really good pages. Also, make sure to look at the right side because they have another sidebar on the right side sometimes, which is in gray and you don't always notice that it's there. But yeah, these are excellent. I give these to clients all the time in my audit documents. I'm giving them solutions.
So if you can find it at the overview page, you can, kind of like this one wonderful index page, instant reference.
Yes.
Okay. So do you remember, I don't know, about 5 years ago when we were told to hurry up and get all of our sites converted to be mobile friendly like now?
Yes.
Yeah. 5 years later, Google is still... 5 years and 8 months later, Google is still migrating websites into Google's mobile first indexing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go for it. Go for it. There's a reason for this.
Yeah, I was just going to just interject that I had a client in 2020, that major, major e-commerce client that still hadn't been converted over to mobile first because they were using an MDOT and it didn't have... where they had a page to a page match. So Google refused to move them over, which is probably good for them. So.
Indeed. indeed. Did they canonicalize properly at least? Because now you got two pages representing exactly the same thing.
Yeah. The big thing that Google looks for in the mobile first rollout is to make sure that you have comparative sites. So if you're using an MDOT, which you really should be off of by now, but if you're using an MDOT, and it's only a small version of your site or doesn't have, kind of one-to-one relevancy to the main site on the desktop, then Google won't convert you over because they don't want to kill your site, which is what would happen. But you have other reasons, I'm sure.
There's other reasons. There's some sites that I think as Google pushed webmasters towards mobile first, they forgot that there's a lot of websites that are never accessed by mobile. Some B2B websites are literally accessed maybe 5% on mobile, 95% desktop. And there's good reasons not to switch some sites immediately into the mobile sphere. Thing is, that's not the reason Google does or doesn't put something in mobile. I don't know what the reason is. I think it's just that there is an incredibly absurd amount of websites of URLs out there, and Google has to take them. Google makes big lists, batch by list or a batch of URLs, and it's churning through them.
It's definitely possible. I mean, there are billions of websites that Google has in the document.
Honestly, at this point, it's innumerable. Yeah. Could you imagine? And think of the URLs created by, say, an e-com setup. That's innumerable. So that's what I think is happening. Honestly, Google's just the web is way too big to do anything quickly.
I think that's part of it. But I also think just working on a lot of auditing that I do, there are a lot of sites out there that don't have proper responsive design or are still on MDOTs and don't have, there's a word for it. It's not comparative, but I'm just going to say comparative. They're not equal. The mobile site's not equal to the desktop site. So they keep using the desktop site so as not to go to straight mobile first, because then the site would lose a lot of its traffic because they're not comparative. They don't have enough pages. They don't have the same things on the pages. And so it's both. It's tons of, like you said, innumerable amount of websites. But also from doing audits that I just see a lot of people where their responsive sites aren't up to snuff, or they're still using MDOTs. And so Google can't move over. And these are big sites because they need those sites in their index, right? But this is just mom and pops. Would Google care that much? Probably not. But I just audited a massive site last year that's still using an MDOT. And the MDOT's not comparative to the desktop version.
So when you check their crawl, who was crawling them?
Desktop.
Interesting. Okay.
Although I asked John, because I do have sites that are on mobile first and they're mobile traffic, but still getting more of the desktop crawler. So I asked if that was a problem. John said no. Sometimes we just choose different crawlers. So because I had one site that was like 80% desktop crawl, but 60% mobile traffic, and had no problems with the mobile responsive site. So it was one of those weird anomalies that I asked John about. But he said that was not indicative of anything. It didn't matter. So,
well, as recently as March 2021, both Search Engine Roundtable and Search Engine Land had been reporting Google was close to finishing. That's, of course, over a year ago, almost a year and a half ago. So. They're getting there, apparently.
It's a hard thing, because if you move someone to mobile first, all the ranking signals, except for a couple mixed hybrid ones like navigation and links, come from their mobile design. So if their content does not equal the content on the other site, they'll just drop.
They will drop like a stone, but it doesn't mean that they're not being evaluated.
No, they are being evaluated. But I guess my thing is, the site last year was one of those brands that, if you didn't see them in the index, you would think something's wrong, right? So Google doesn't, people think they favor brands. They don't favor brands, but they're not going to make changes that drop sites that people expect to be in the index out of the index. Because why would, people wouldn't think Google's a good search result, right? A good search engine. People forget that Google's product isn't their search result pages. It's the sites they pull back. So if I did a search for XYZ and we expected ABC company to be there, and they're suddenly not there because Google made a change, well, people go to Bing because I can't find the sites, and they know the site should be there.
Nice.
So, yeah. So that's my theory of the case.
Okay, we're closing in. We're actually in the last 10 minutes of the show. We got a couple more stories that could go long. So, I kind of like saving these cool ones to the last, though, because you remember the days of the SEO world when you were looking just desperate for any clue on how Google worked.
Oh sure, I said, well, we still do that.
Well, here's one. Core Web Vitals not impacting no index pages.
Yes.
So this is how Google sees the a no index page. It doesn't. So I'm quoting directly from the Chrome Dev Doc. Any page will not meet the discoverability requirement if any of the following conditions are met, including root pages of the original data for the origin data set. The page is served with an HTTPX robots tag, no index header or an equivalent. So you're telling it in the robots tag, no index, or the document includes a meta name robots content equals no index meta tag or its equivalent. So you tell Google not to index it. Google won't even check its vitals.
I have to say, I feel very embarrassed. I did not know they were counting no index pages, and I know a no index page sometimes can show up in the search results, but Google is using your visitors to determine core web vitals, the 75% basically of those visitors to determine how fast your pages are loading. How are they getting to the no index pages? And are they using ones that people no index intentionally because they don't want Google to crawl it? Then how is Google getting that information?
That's a very good question.
Right, because they would have to find it from search. If they're just finding it in your site because you have a link to it, I mean, Google could find it. But how is Google tracking? I don't know. I just thought that was a weird thing.
That's why I prefaced the story with the way I did. Like, you remember, there's a clue in here on how Google works and see things. And we could analyze it for all afternoon long. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot. We have about 5 minutes to analyze it. actually, we got about 5 minutes, so we're out of here. But I think that's really cool. There's a lot of reasons to have pages in your site no indexed. Although, obviously, if you want it to be in Google search results, you need to let it be in Google search results. But there's good reasons to have no index content on your site.
How does Google know
it's there? Because Google knows everything's there. It's just not going to use it.
They can follow it. I mean, they can follow the link to the page, but since it's no index, they're not reading the page. So my question is, how are they getting...
Or they're not recording information from the page to make available to others.
Right. They're supposedly, as soon as they hit the no index side, they're supposed to, not be doing anything with that page. But I just don't understand how they're getting core vitals, which is somebody visiting that page through a no index page that they shouldn't be reading in the first place. So
you want to make your website your pages available for core web vitals, make them available for discoverability.
Very true. And one of the really good reasons people no index is like WordPress has tagged pages. Most of the times those are low quality. There's just accumulation of blog articles, but they want their users to still be able to use the tags to find those articles. So you'll no index those pages, but you'll keep them linked in your actual site.
Okay. Last one we're going to have time for. It's a really good one though. It's one of those basic overview stories. And also it's written by Roger Monty, which is, Roger puts the work into his articles.
He does. Yeah, he does a good job.
And this one is it's really important. 17 SEO best ranking practices, or best practices for better ranking. And, it's basic stuff. It's easy stuff, stuff that everybody should know, but it's stuff that, it's like a good checklist to have because with all the stuff, you often forget about stuff that you ought to be thinking about because you know so much damn stuff.
That's very true. And if you take this document or the developer documents, you do better than reading the quality rater guides for SEO tricks.
Actually, very probably. Very, very probably. You want to rank well. Here's the best. Let you put this on the very front of the quality raters guide. If you don't work for us, build good sites.
I like that.
That'd be $5, Google.
Tweet that. I'm going to tweet that.
That should be on the very front page of the QRC. Or QRG.
QRG, I love that. If you don't work for us, just build good sites.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Roger's piece on the 17 best practices just to get going for better ranking SEO goes from, choosing your platform to choosing your hosting company to building and structuring content. When it's appropriate to use AI, how to do SEO on product pages, how to do SEO on category pages. You have a question about the way any given website might be structured and how to work in different parts of those websites. Roger's probably thinking about it and answering it in this article.
Yes, he did a very good job. And if you do WordPress, especially, because he has a lot of WordPress specific tips in there, like managed hosting. And stuff.
You know, last week, I don't know if you heard, but last week, Dave and I were talking about the stats for platforms came out, user stats, and WordPress is still by far and away over 50% of all websites out there are WordPress sites.
It makes sense just because of the fact that you can, if you have developers, you want to be able to like get into the details of a site, then they can do that with WordPress. And you can't do that with like CMS sites like Wix, you know, or Duda. Those are great sites to do, you know, quick builds, website builds, or if you don't have expertise. But when you need to get into the heavy-handed programming part, you can't do that because that's their job. So oh, yeah. WordPress allows you to like put a front on even a React site. You know, where
yeah, anything WordPress and higher, you can get the devs involved and seriously work miracles and magic. That's not to take away from the smaller DIY platforms at all, but they're just not, you know, in some cases as robust as, and you don't want to be meeting a Shopify account, a Shopify competitor with a Wix page. It just, you know. better product than you do.
I mean, the thing is just basically on what type of site you are, how big you're going to grow, and your dev resources. And if you have no dev resources and you're not going to grow more than what you're putting out there, Wix and Duda, all those are fantastic sites to use. But if you're going to be growing, you outgrow the platform and you can't easily change to a new one.
Okay. And on that, Christine, we've gone full clock, 60 minutes. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls sat in for Dave Davies from Weights and Biases. So again, Christine, thank you so very much. Friends, Webcology is still looking for a sponsor. And if you're interested in sponsoring this hour of extraordinarily fine SEO-focused Webmaster Radio content, get in contact with Brasco at WMR.FM. He'll get you all set up. I want to thank Ricky, our producer, and the WMR family. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Rank well, be kind to each other, be well, and we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.